FanDuel and the Phil Nason Show have partnered to bring you a 100% signing bonus up to $200 when you play fantasy sports at FanDuel. For your 100% signing bonus, please use the promo code PhillyFlash and win some cash with a flash playing fantasy sports at FanDuel today.
The Phil Nason Show, is on in five, four, three, two, one.
Welcome to the Phil Nason Show. I'm happy to have you here. We'll be here for the entire hour. We'll talk a lot of Cleveland sports, and we have a brand new guest on the show, and I'm really looking forward to talking to this guy. I've been a big fan of PeachtreeHoops.com for a very, very long time, and their managing editor and my new friend, Chris Willis, is in the house. Chris, how you doing? Welcome to the show.
Hey, doing great, Phil. I appreciate you having me.
Man, I'm happy to have you here. Hey, tell my listeners about Peachtree Hoops. What is it? How it all came to be? And you can talk about yourself a little bit if you like.
Peachtree Hoops is the Atlanta Hawks site for the SB Nation Network. We cover the Hawks, try to cover the Hawks inside and out. We got a great team of riders. This will be my fifth season covering the team. We've got guys that are credentialed. In fact, I'm going to Phillips Arena here in just a little bit to see them play the Pistons tonight. So looking forward to another regular season.
It's going to be a lot of fun, man. So now how many riders do you have over there now?
I think we've got about 8 regulars on the masthead now. Myself and Jason Walker, we kind of split managing duties on the site, but we've really grown over the last couple of years, so we're looking forward to hopefully taking it to another level this year.
That sounds good. You know, we talked about the Hawks this past week with Matt Moore from CBS Sports, and he had a lot of high hopes for them, like a third or fourth seed, as I do too. And one of the things that he said, Chris, was that he thought that they would band together and the chemistry would be even better because of the Danny Ferry mess. Do you think that the Hawks are going to do that, or they want to just put that behind them, or have they? What was your take on the whole thing, too, by the way?
Well, that's a great question. Media Day, you know, obviously the Danny Ferry situation was the topic of choice, but ever since that day, it's kind of faded into the background a little bit. The players, the coaching staff, they've discussed it internally. It appears that I think Matt's right. I believe that in fact they may in fact huddle together a little bit and you know, use that as fuel for the season. You know, the whole thing on its whole, I mean, it's obviously very unfortunate. You know, we're still kind of having a holding pattern with the Danny Ferry situation. He's still away from the team. We don't know if he's coming back. We don't know if that's an option. And it may not be resolved until the team's actually sold later this year, hopefully.
Yeah, that's an ugly thing, too. You know, because you don't expect it from Danny Ferry. And, you know, maybe it wasn't him so much as what he allowed to happen, but it's still got to be rough for those young people down there who play for the Hawks, who go, man, what is this? Is this going to be another one of those Los Angeles Clippers things? And that's just been so tough. And that's one of the reasons a lot of people are pulling for the Hawks. And with good reason. Is this the year? Because when you look at that roster, if they stay healthy, Chris, this is a good team.
I agree with you. This is a really good team. You know, is it a championship contender? I'm not sure, but I do think it's a team that if it's healthy and they're firing on all cylinders, no one is going to want to play in the playoffs. They're not going to be an easy out, and I think that's exactly the type of team that Mike Budenholzer's tried to build since he's been here. You know, he just wants a team. He talks about it all the time. He wants a team that will not quit, that they will not lay down against anybody. And we saw a little bit of that last year. I mean, they lost Al Horford 29 games into the year, you know, and they were able to sustain it for over a month. I think they were still third, fourth in the East up until just the rest of the front court got injured. And, I mean, they just just had a very bad February, but you know, they get semi healthy for the playoffs, and they gave Indiana all they wanted in the first round.
They sure did. I remember having Tom Lewis on the show last year, and he stayed for the entire season, and it was like the Pacers couldn't win in Phillips Arena. And one of the reasons, because of the way they shoot, that backcourt sizzles. Kyle Korver and Jeff Teague, and Jeff Teague has come into his own, or came into his own last season. What do you need to see out of that backcourt, Chris, that's going to make you happy? What have you seen thus far in the preseason?
Well, the preseason's kind of been interesting. I mean, Mike Budenholzer, they've played a lot of young guys. We've seen John Jenkins come back from injury, kind of come out of nowhere. He's had a really good preseason. You know, Jeff Teague and some of those guys, they're just they've just been kind of getting in a rhythm in the preseason, hadn't played a lot of minutes yet. But I think we could see another jump maybe from Teague, because, I mean, if you look at his season last year, he really got off to a very poor shooting start from three-point range, and he kind of got to his career average in the second half. But if he's hitting threes, he's even harder to guard than he is, and he thrives in Atlanta's pick-and-roll game. So, you know, I think Teague can even be even better, and he'll have his pick-and-pop partner Horford back. And that should give him an opportunity to have more assists. And, you know, the biggest thing I think for him, you know, I think Hawks fans would like to see a little more consistency on the defensive end. And that's something that Budenholzer and the coaching staff talked a lot about during the preseason.
I think you're right, too. And one of the things that they did was bring in Thabo Sefolosha, and who's a defensive stopper. He's been his whole career. Is he going to be an impact player for the Hawks defensively?
He's had a really good preseason so far, and I mean, not when I say good, not with eye popping numbers, but you know, he's stuffing the stat sheet. He's doing the type of things that I think he'll do during the regular season for his team. He's not going to be a starter unless somebody goes down, but he can fill in well on that shooting guard small forward spot, and that was a place they were so weak last year. If Damari Carroll was out, I mean, the Hawks just really didn't have another option at small forward to guard the scoring wings that so many other teams have. I like Thabo. I think it's a solid. I think he wants to prove that last year that calf injury derailed him, and it wasn't that he was on the downside of his career. So I think he's really motivated too.
I think he should be. He doesn't really have much to prove, but then again, he has a lot to prove. And it's unfortunate that an injury usually determines it. And when you talk about injuries, one of the things that makes me nervous, and relax, Hawks fans, I'm not putting a hex on you, but Al Horford, the last couple seasons, it's just not been good. The Hawks have gone, rolling, and then he gets hurt. When you watch him play, do you hold your breath?
Well, anytime he grabs a shoulder or something, we always hold our breath because he's two for two. I mean, it's been about the worst case scenario both times. You know, he's hopeful. What we talked to him on media day, and you know, he's changed some of the way he's training to try to combat those pectoral injuries he's had. You know, he's back on the court now, got back on the court this week, hadn't played a lot of minutes yet, but it looks like he's trying to get comfortable again. And I think that's the biggest thing for him is just getting comfortable and getting back out there and getting banged around a little bit. But you're right. He is the key. I mean, you know, the Hawks are deeper this year. I like the roster top to bottom, but there's no replacing Al Horford for this team. I mean, if he's out there, I expect him to be really, really good. And if he's not, they're probably going to struggle again.
I think that you're right, too. And how come no one, except for a few people, talk about Mike Scott, who's fantastic? People don't even know he's one of the best players on the Hawks. Why is that?
That's a great question. I mean, that guy's fun. I mean, with the team, I mean, I hear a lot of people talk about the Spurs, and they're, you know, they can be boring. Personally, I don't think winning is boring. I'm very happy with that. But, you know, the style of play. But Mike Scott is an exciting player. You know, he can finish at the rim. He can really heat up on the offensive end. And for a second round pick to watch that guy grow, you know, it's been really fun. I think he's interested in taking another step this year. He's an X factor for the team off the bench. He comes in the game. He can put up points in a hurry.
Yep, he can. And you know what, though? This team has the right mix. John Jenkins is another one of my favorite players. He just does things that are just tremendous. He didn't get much of a chance as a rookie, and I was kind of critical about that on this show. Last year, he kind of tried to get into his own. Is this going to be a breakout season for John Jenkins? Or if it's not him, who do we look for breakout seasons from the Atlanta Hawks?
You know, Jenkins was coming off that back injury last year and missed most of the season. And, you know, he's been a surprise. I mean, I think most people put him as the 15th man on this roster coming in. You know, and he's got an option that's due on Halloween, October 31st. And, you know, there's still no indication the Hawks are going to pick that up or not. You know, he's a possibility for a breakout guy. There's a lot of guys in the backcourt. The guy that I'm most excited to see get in the mix, though, is Kent Bazemore, who's another guy they added during the offseason. I really liked what I saw from him last season with the Lakers and the Warriors. I've talked to some of the guys that have watched him play, covered him, and they were just ecstatic about him. Just felt like he just never got an opportunity. And I think he can be this year's DeMar Carroll for the Hawks in a lot of ways. You know, he's another guy. He said at Media Day that he prides himself as a defensive player first, and I think that fits perfectly to what the Hawks were looking for this year.
Absolutely. Matt Moore and I talked about Bazemore, the addition of Bazemore, and how good it was going to be for that basketball team. And like I said before, Matt has them picked at like a third or fourth seed. It's an incredible jump. Now, Mike Budenholzer, he's a very, how do I put this? A lot of people don't even know who he is. What have you learned about him as a coach now? He's been a coach for a full season, and now you're seeing him in the preseason without a cloud hanging over his head. What do you see in him?
I like him a lot. You know, I mean, obviously he comes from one of the most successful franchises ever. I mean, who better to learn from than Greg Popovich and the Spurs? But I've really liked it. He brings a very easy and fun to watch style of basketball. They call it they play at high tempo, they space the floor. You know, I think he shot a little more threes last year than he really wanted to, but it was out of necessity after Horford went down. But they come in and they want to change the culture of an Atlanta. You know, he said all the right things. They want to work hard. He talks constantly about internal improvement. And I think guys like Mike Scott, even Paul Millsap, I mean, he comes to Atlanta last year, he starts shooting threes and knocks them down at a high rate. You know, I mean, it doesn't matter if you're an 8 or 9 year veteran. I mean, he's looking for ways for you to improve. And, you know, I like him a lot. I'm anxious to see him in year two.
Yeah, I think you're right. It was a good choice, I thought, too. And you're right. He did learn a lot from Greg Popovich. Who wouldn't? I mean, he's a great coach, and he's a great mentor of coaches, too. Look at the success others have seen because they've come out of that system. We've got a couple minutes left, Chris. Where do you see the Hawks finishing in 2014-2015?
I think a lot of people are sleeping on this team in a lot of ways. I think they're really good. They've come through the preseason, you know, fairly healthy, got a lot of guys back now working their ways in. I think if they can avoid a big injury to a key player, I think that anywhere from the third seed to the sixth seed's probably in play. I think if Horford stays healthy all year, that they can compete for a home court advantage in the first round of the playoffs. I pretty much felt like that last year, but I think the team's even deeper this year. So, you know, I think it all comes down to health. I mean, that's the case with a lot of the East, but I think the Hawks are going to be right there in the mix.
Well, I think so too. I've got them around a fifth seed. David Zavick from Fear the Sword said that if he saw one team he didn't want to play in the playoffs, it would be Atlanta because of the way they shoot. And I agree with him. They're a deadly team, and if they stay healthy, this is going to be a very fun season for the Atlanta Hawks and their fan base, which is a tremendous fan base. One I've interacted with, we have a large, I don't know if you know this, Chris, but we already have a large following from the Atlanta area. So having you on the show just makes it all that much better. Thanks for being on the show with me. We'll see you next week, man.
All right, buddy. I appreciate it.
All right. That was Chris Willis. You can find him over at PeachTreeHoops.com. And we'll be right back. You're listening to The Phil Nason Show.
Hi, we're Rob Folkett, and you're listening to Phil Nason Show.
Riveting talk radio.
Everybody get up. People cannot get away from the internet.
Well,
now.
I think it probably comes from porn as well. You know what I mean? That's got to be a big, strong thing.
Oh, that's gross. That's disgusting.
And it freaks me out.
My cheeks are sealed.
We love talk radio.
Bend over, baby.
Do you see what I'm saying?
WeirdTalkSuperstation.com.
Better than sex.
I don't know how good sex is.
We're going to do a lot of drinking.
Dog radio. Bend over, baby.
That was great.
FanDuel and the Phil Nason Show have partnered to bring you a 100% signing bonus up to $200 when you play fantasy sports at FanDuel. For your 100% signing bonus, please use the promo code PhillyFlash and win some cash with the Flash playing fantasy sports at FanDuel today.
Central Portugal's only English-speaking information station, this is Epics Radio. Listen online, www.epicsradio.com.
If you like baseball, you should be checking out baseballpodcasts.net. It's one of the best places you can go on the internet to listen to independent baseball talk shows 24 hours a day, 7 days a week on our radio player that can be heard around the world. So won't you tune in and give us a listen at baseballpodcast.net. You can also listen to the great Phil Nason Show here. See you there at baseballpodcast.net.
Brewtown Sports is your source for Brewers news and notes. Join Mr. Brewtown as he keeps you up to date on all the happenings of your Milwaukee Brewers and Major League Baseball. Follow the show on Facebook and Twitter, Brewtown Sports. Listen 24/7 at BrewtownSports.podomatic.com.
Hi, this is Phil Nason from This Week in Tennis and The Phil Nason Show. Max Sports Channels offers the best in sports talk radio, as well as great music 24 hours a day. It's my daily destination, and I hope it's yours. The sports talk begins each and every day at 3 p.m. and ends around 9 p.m. Special programming on the weekends. And in between all that, the hottest music on the internet. That's Max Sports Channels. Make it your daily destination.
You're listening to AFR, the Armed Forces Radio Network.
And now,
shut the hell up.
Back to the Phil Nason Show.
Welcome back to the Phil Nason Show. As many of you know, I moved to Akron, Ohio from Corfu, Greece about 2 months ago. And one of my things that I wanted to do was have an all-Cleveland day. Well, we're two-thirds of the way there now that Jason Lukart from Let's Go Tribe is here. And he's on the line. Jason, how you doing? Welcome to the show.
Thanks. Thanks for having me. I'm doing well.
I am too. I'm really happy to have you. I'm glad that we could make this work. Tell us a little bit about Let's Go Tribe and who you are and your writers. Go ahead and plug the site.
Sure. So Let's Go Tribe is the Cleveland Indian site that's part of SB Nation. And the site's been around for almost 10 years, which long predates my own involvement. I've been writing for the site for a little over 2 years. I've been the managing editor for about a year now. We've got a group of about 8 or 10 guys doing work, try to cover as much as we can, cover what's going on with the team, transactions, prospects, try to bring humorous things in when we can. And it's been a lot of fun to be a part of. It's been, in my, I'm sure, biased opinion, we do a better job of covering the Indians than any site like us.
And that's absolutely correct. That's why I contacted you. Not because you work with SB Nation, because I do a lot of stuff with SB Nation sites, but there's some SB Nation sites I don't. And I have other people because their sites are just better. I mean, the work is just better. But Let's Go Tribe is the number one Cleveland Indians website for a reason. You guys do a lot of good work. You've been my resource for the past 5 years whenever I needed Cleveland Indian stuff. So I'm really happy to have you here. One of the things, when I got back, one of the things people were asking me all the time is Corey Kluber, say that thing 3 times real fast. But Cy Young candidate, is he a winner or is he going to lose out to King Felix? Or maybe someone else?
I tend to think he'll lose out to Felix. I think Hernandez, the name recognition factor is a big deal. I think people were considering him a candidate longer. And I think this is the sort of thing where sometimes people kind of make up their minds early and it's hard for their minds to be changed. And I don't think Felix would be a bad choice. I don't think either of them would be a bad choice. I do think Kluber was just a little better. And I can get into that if you'd like, but I tend to think Felix will come out ahead.
Oh, we're going to get into it because that's why we're here, to entertain the fans and to have a little fun. I have Corey Kluber as above Felix Hernandez. One of the reasons is because of the way he pitched down the stretch. Both teams were in the same boat fighting for a wild card. And Kluber went down the stretch, 8-3, something like that. He had back-to-back 14 strikeout games. Yeah. His ERA was lower over the course of the season. While at the beginning of the season, his wins above replacements was a little bit lower. Now he has the highest wins above replacement of any American League player other than, I think, Mike Trout, right?
Yep, correct.
So, I mean, I don't know where the – I hate that name recognition thing too, Jason. I really hate that. Because it's not fair to a kid like Kluber, who this might be his best season ever, or it is, and he may never get there again. You never know with these guys, right?
Yeah, no. I mean, a season as good as his, even a great pitcher, is rarely going to have a season this good. And, like you said, down the stretch, in the second half, he had a 1.73 ERA. He struck out something like 11 guys for every 9 innings. His second half was incredible. And, overall, Felix's ERA was a little lower. Part of that's Felix pitching his home games in a better pitcher's park. And when you look at the things that pitchers can control, I don't know if you're familiar with FIP, which is fielding independent pitching. But strikeouts, walks, home runs, Kluber's FIP was better. And, the Indians, I hate to say it, but had a horrible, horrible defense this year. Worst defense in baseball. And, some of that gets noted with unearned runs, and that's not in his ERA, but there's also plays that a better defense makes that the Indians were so bad they weren't even getting to them to make errors, and they just go in as, as doubles that for other teams would have been outs. And I think when you look at what a pitcher can really control, I think Kluber was the best pitcher.
Yep, he sure was, and I'm very familiar with FIP. We do a lot of fantasy sports. I write exclusive fantasy sports baseball stuff for a couple of sites. Yeah, exactly. And I was going to note, too, about the bad defense, because the Indians play atrocious defense. That's why they didn't win the division. If they would have played better defense, they probably would have won the division. And honestly, Corey Kluber had a better season. He is, in my opinion, the Cy Young Award winner for 2014.
Yeah, I hope I'm wrong about who will win. I think with 3 weeks left in the season, I didn't think there was any chance Kluber could win. And I at least think he's got a chance now. And we'll find out in 2 or 3 weeks, I guess.
Well, I'll see Terry Pluto on Monday, and I'll make sure I push this again on him. Because we need the Baseball Writers of America to take care of business and not play a popularity contest.
Yeah.
You know, and that's usually what some of them do. Some of them do. You know, not all of them, but some of them do. Pluto's one of those guys that doesn't do that. So, but honestly, he is the. You could probably even make a case if it's not him or Felix Hernandez. You know what they could do is just give it to John Lester. Lester had a pretty good year too.
Yeah, he did, both before and after the trade.
And that would suck because he didn't have as good a year as Corey Kluber did. It's going to be interesting, and if this happens and he doesn't win it, we're going to just come back on the air and just rip the crap out of these guys. That's what we'll do because they were just stupid. If you don't pick Corey Kluber as your Cy Young Award winner with all the information in front of you, then you either are A, biased, or B, stupid and shouldn't be covering sports. That's my opinion.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, you mentioned the Baseball Writers who vote on this. I do think they've gotten better about things in recent years in terms of looking at things for pitchers beyond just, you know, ERA and wins, for hitters looking at beyond just batting average and RBI. So I think as a group, they're getting better. Part of that is probably new members getting brought in. You've got sites like FanGraphs that are now being accepted into the Baseball Writers Association. And, you know, those guys starting to get votes. And some of it is probably guys who've been doing this for a long time, but who are open-minded and are learning new things about the game. So that gives me at least hope that Kluber might win. We'll see.
And if they doesn't win, we'll come back on here the next day and yeah. Rip the crap out of whoever voted
Sounds
against him.
Good.
I'm really serious about that, too. All right, I hate to bring this up. Let's just get this out of the way. What went wrong with the Indians this season? Why? Because they played so well down the stretch, just like they did the season before. What happened to the Cleveland Indians? Because a lot of people ask me that. What happened to this baseball team?
I think the biggest thing to identify a single thing for me was Jason Kipnis. I think he was the team's best player last year. And, you know, at his age, there was an expectation that he was still coming into his prime and might even get better. And instead, his numbers really fell off. And at one point, he suffered a strained oblique. And there was a lot of talk that he never really recovered from that. And that might be true. But even before the injury, his numbers were way down. And that made a big difference. You know, beyond him, Nick Swisher was okay in his first year with the team and had some big hits. He sort of fell off the table in 2014 and was, when he was on the field, which was less and less as the year went by, he was one of the, I hate to say it, but one of the worst players in baseball. And so that was a big disappointment. You know, Justin Masterson had a really bad season before he was traded, and the starting rotation was amazing after the All-Star break. But they were in shambles for the first 3.5 months, and Masterson was a big part of that. So I think those are, you know, in terms of picking out single players, the ones who jump out at me. In terms of like more of a team-wide trend, the defense, as you already mentioned, you know, it really might have cost them, like you said, the division. I think they probably would have won 4 or 5 more games. And, you know, if a couple of those games are against Detroit or Kansas City, they pass both of them. It was hard to watch at times. It's really frustrating to be watching, you know, professional athletes who seem to struggle so mightily at what seems like a relatively, you know, basic part of the game. Not that being a great defensive team is basic, but just to be a competent one. And they weren't competent this year.
No, they sure weren't. And that was probably what did it. That's, in my opinion, that is what did it. It's frustrating when you're playing ball to come from behind and have holes dug for you all the time. You know, it's really difficult. I think it's a wear and it's a tear. But they played really well down the stretch. So I guess let's flip the coin. And what went right this season for the Indians? What can fans sit back now that the season is over when they're watching the Kansas City Royals, which is the craziest thing you've ever seen in the World Series? And God bless them. Congratulations. I think it's amazing. But what went right for the Indians, besides Kluber, of course?
Well, I think, you know, in addition to Clue, I think the entire rotation by the end of the year, I think the last, you know, basically 2 months of the season, August, September, the starting rotation as a group did as well as it's done since, I don't know when, a long time, maybe since before I was paying attention. You know, so Kluber, of course, and we already talked about him, Carlos Carrasco, who I had sort of given up on as being a productive starter and was happy with him in the bullpen where he was doing well. And it felt sort of like a move made in desperation to put him back in the rotation. And he was just as good as Kluber for those last 2 months. You know, not quite as many innings, but he was fantastic. And he looks like maybe a legitimate number two. TJ House, who I didn't put much thought into him being a big part of the rotation, but he did really well, and it's nice to have a lefty. I think the rotation, you got Danny Salazar and Trevor Bauer too, who are pretty inconsistent, but certainly have a ton of talent. I think Indians fans should be really excited about the state of the rotation, more so than they have been in at least, you know, 15, 20 years. So I think that's the big positive from this year. On the position player side of things, Yan Gomes showed that 2013 wasn't a fluke. He's one of the best defensive catchers, and he's also a plus hitter, which is a big plus for a catcher. Michael Brantley, the step up he took was really exciting. He ought to land somewhere in the top five of the MVP voting. You know, Carlos Santana has a really low batting average, but led the majors in walks and led the team in home runs. There are a lot of really good players on the team, and just about all of them are under team control for at least another 3 years. So if they can bring in the right pieces to go with those guys, they should be a contender for the next few years.
Well, they absolutely should. Lonnie Chisenhall was another one I thought did pretty well. I kind of was trumping him up for as a sleeper in fantasy baseball in the spring. I said, Santana's not going to be able to play third base, and they're going to need somebody. And that's going to be your guy. And Chisenhall, I thought he did all right. Defensively is another issue. But
sure.
That is what it is. But Brantley was a beast. And Yan Gomes, too. That is another guy. I drafted him in fantasy baseball. People looked at me like I was crazy. and I said, no, I'm telling you, this kid is good. Because if they're worried about where they're going to put Santana, that must mean something. Pay attention to these things. And I thought he did fantastic, especially at the plate. Once he got comfortable, and then he got that concussion, and think, you know, and that when you get your bell rung like that, it's not so easy. What do you think they're going to eventually do with Yan Gomes? Move him out from behind the plate, because this is such a good, talented kid. You don't want to lose him to the concussion world. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think they'll keep him behind the plate, though. In part, his defense is really good, and you know, his bat's nice, but he loses a lot of his overall value if he's not catching. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if they try to get him, you know, a game a week at DH or something like that. They've got a guy named Roberto Perez, a young guy who also plays really strong defense, and I think will probably be one of the better backup catchers. So you can feel pretty comfortable having him, you know, start one, sometimes two games a week. So I think they can maybe, you know, try to minimize the wear and tear on Gomes a bit. But I think so much of his value is tied up in him being able to be behind the plate. I think for the next 2 or 3 years, they'll, as much as they can, just kind of, you know, let him do his thing back there and hope that, you know, he doesn't suffer another concussion.
Yeah, that makes sense. You know, Brantley, he came out of really, he was a pretty good ball player. Now he's an all-star. That was kind of fun to watch. And Santana, yeah, his batting average will kill you. But leading, it's really weird. How can you have a low batting average and still lead the league in walks? I don't understand that. But he somehow figured it out and made it happen. Who was the biggest surprise for you on this team? Because we've got about 45 seconds, man.
For me, it was Brantley. You know, I've liked Brantley for the last 2 or 3 years. But what I've been saying, you know, is that there's a place for just an average solid player, pretty good defense, you know, pretty good hitting. And I was content with that. And for him to go from slightly above average to legitimate, you know, top five player in the league, for me, that was a big surprise. And it'll be really exciting to see if he can keep that up.
Absolutely. It'll be fun. And we'll be here to cover it all. Jason, thank you so much for being on the show with me today.
Sir, thanks for having me, Phil.
All right, that was Jason Lukart. You can find him at letsgotribe.com. Coming up next, If you're a Cleveland Cavaliers fan, you're going to enjoy this next one. David Zavick will be here to talk Cleveland Cavaliers hoop. And you're listening to The Phil Nason Show.
Hi, we're all Folkett, and you're listening to Phil Nason Show.
Riveting talk radio. Everybody
get up. People cannot get away from the internet.
Well,
now.
I think it probably comes from porn as well. You know what I mean? That's got to be a big, strong thing.
Oh, that's gross. That's disgusting.
And it freaks me out.
My cheeks are sealed.
We love talk radio.
Bend over, baby.
Do you see what I'm saying?
WeirdTalkSuperstation.com.
Better than sex.
I don't know how good sex is.
We're going to do a lot of drinking.
Dog radio. Bend over, baby.
That was great.
FanDuel and the Phil Nason Show have partnered to bring you a 100% signing bonus up to $200 when you play fantasy sports at FanDuel. For your 100% signing bonus, please use the promo code PhillyFlash and win some cash with a flash playing fantasy sports at FanDuel today.
Central Portugal's only English-speaking information station, this is Epics Radio. Listen online, www.epicsradio.com.
If you like baseball, you should be checking out baseballpodcasts.net. It's one of the best places you can go on the internet to listen to independent baseball talk shows 24 hours a day, 7 days a week on our radio player that can be heard around the world. So won't you tune in and give us a listen at baseballpodcast.net. You can also listen to the great Phil Nason Show here. See you there at baseballpodcast.net.
Brewtown Sports is your source for Brewers news and notes. Join Mr. Brewtown as he keeps you up to date on all the happenings of your Milwaukee Brewers and Major League Baseball. Follow the show on Facebook and Twitter, Brewtown Sports. Listen 24/7 at BrewtownSports.podomatic.com.
Hi, this is Phil Nasons from This Week in Tennis and The Phil Nasons Show. Max Sports Channels offers the best in sports talk radio, as well as great music 24 hours a day. It's my daily destination, and I hope it's yours. The sports talk begins each and every day at 3 p.m. and ends around 9 p.m. Special programming on the weekends. And in between all that, the hottest music on the internet. That's Max Sports Channels. Make it your daily destination.
You're listening to AFR, the Armed Forces Radio Network.
And now,
shut the hell up.
Back to the Phil Nason Show.
Welcome back to the Phil Nason Show. We're wrapping up an amazing day of NBA and Major League Baseball talk. And joining me to finish out two-thirds of our Cleveland Monday, because the football guy still hasn't written back, please welcome from FearTheSword.com, Justin Rowland's in the house. Justin, how you doing? Welcome to the show.
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me back.
Hey, it's my pleasure. I guess it's pretty, you know what, attacking future guests is probably not a good idea, is it?
You never know.
Well, I'll get somebody. Anyway, how you doing? How are the Cavs doing? Have you enjoyed this preseason so far?
You know what? I have really enjoyed it. I mean, it's just so much fun to see LeBron back in a Cavs jersey. Seeing the quick impact that David Blatt's had on the movement compared to Mike Brown last year. There's a lot of really interesting things to I guess, observe with this Cavs team so far in preseason, and I can't wait to see how it translates to the regular season.
That's fantastic. Now, what have you observed so far? Because a lot of people, you know, these preseason games, they don't show them all, and NBA TV only shows a select few. Mm-hmm. Tell us about what you are seeing with this team that's, say, different, besides LeBron and Kevin Love. What makes this team so much different this year?
Well, I mean, there's constant movement within the offense. A lot of what you see, you'll see a play developing on the strong side. So you might see three players working on something. But on the weak side, there's kind of a counter motion there. So if the defense isn't giving what they want on the strong side, they can do a quick rotation, swing the ball around, and then there's already a play developing with the weak-sided guys. There's a lot of standing around with Mike Brown and his offense, and you can tell that the guys off ball know where to be and what to do, which is, in my opinion, one of the keys to a really great offense, is everyone knows where they should be at all times.
Well, Blatt will do that. You know, that's what I told you before. I guess I told you and I told David when he was here from Fear the Sword that he's going to move the ball. That's one thing that's going to be different.
Mm-hmm.
Defensively, though, where are they at? Do you like where they're at, or where do you see the improvement coming?
I think defense is going to take longer than the offense for them to gel. Big part of defense is communication, familiarity, knowing, once you've had enough time to play with a lot of other players, you get familiar with when they want to switch, what they're capable of, and that kind of familiarity is going to take time to develop. I think the offense is going to come along quicker because we just got a lot of players with high basketball IQ, but overall, I think the defense hasn't been bad for preseason. Tristan Thompson's blocking more shots than he has in the past. Brendan Haywood looks alive. I don't know if you can compliment him much more than that so far, but that's a step in the right direction. And Varejao looks very quick as well. He looks like he's slimmed down, and he might be ready for a more healthy campaign with his physical state.
Well, that brings up something you brought up, Tristan Thompson. And I got murdered for this because I cover the Cavs, as you know, also. And I thought, and I still believe, that they should extend Tristan Thompson's contract before the 31st of October. Otherwise, they're going to pay a fortune because this kid's going to get off this year. Really right. Off.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think about that? Do you think they should extend him, or do you think they should wait and see? How do you handle Tristan Thompson?
I think they should, and I think they're going to extend him. I've always been a big believer in Tristan Thompson. I believe it was Steve Nash a couple of years ago, 2 years ago. He said that Thompson has a top five work ethic out of all the pros he's been around in his time in the NBA. I mean, this guy, the guy that's played with Kobe, Dirk, and been around a lot of really good players. So whatever Thompson's ceiling is, I think he's going to reach it based on that work ethic. And I think, judging from preseason, he's developed chemistry with LeBron. He's a more intelligent player. He's improved a lot. And I think if you let him go to restricted free agency, you might see a team like Toronto trying to bring him back to his hometown there and offer him a big deal. I think with the salary cap going up, it's tough to overpay a player almost. So if you can lock him up for, let's say, 4 years, 42, I'd go ahead and do it.
That's about what I thought too. And the other thing that I base it on is, look what happened with Utah and Gordon Hayward.
Mm-hmm.
He's a very nice player, but he's not $16 million a year nice. And that's
he might be under the
system.
New cap, but it's definitely if they signed him to an extension, they probably could have got him for less than they did there. Although he may reach that ceiling, but I mean, it's a gamble now at this point, right?
Absolutely, and I wouldn't take that gamble. I would sign him and do my thing, and I think he would do it. He's mm-hmm. having a fantastic preseason, though. He's averaging a double-double. Yep. He's got, what, 13 points a game, and he's averaging 10.5 rebounds a game.
The biggest thing is he hasn't shot below 50% in a preseason game yet. So his field goal percentage is up there. His free throws, he's shooting very well from the free throw line. He was, after the All-Star break last year, he shot 73% from the free throw line. So that's a 29-game stretch. It's perfectly reasonable to see him hit that mark this year or kind of exceed that mark.
He's going to be a beast. And you folks listening for fantasy basketball, I might end up putting him on my sleeper list. You might end up having to draft him in your 10-team league even, because this kid's going to be the recipient of a lot of different things. With that offense, he's going to get options like he's never had in his life. He's going to get handoff passes. He's going to get a lot of putbacks, because you're not going to be able to double team anyone on that basketball floor. And that's going to be brutal. And he's going to just kill folks. And this is a beautiful thing, because I'm a big Tristan Thompson fan.
That's awesome to hear. I mean, it seems like a lot of people have kind of used up a lot of their patience with Thompson, expecting too much too early. But, I mean, he was drafted as a project big. He's one of the few guys that's been durable. So when Kyrie's out or Dion's out, who both have had issues with injuries so far in their careers, I mean, Thompson was basically the only NBA player out there at times. And as a guy that isn't really capable or comfortable creating his own offense yet at this point in his career, he kind of got overexposed. So I think people needed more realistic expectations up until this point. And I think now with the supporting cast or with the featured players in place, he's able to be in his supporting role. And I mean, he might be this era's Varejao, right?
He's going to be better. He's going to be better than Varejao. This kid's going to be really good. You can see it when you watch them play. When you watch him run down the floor, he's running down the floor a different Tristan Thompson than I've ever seen him run down the floor.
Mm-hmm.
He looks good, too.
Yeah, he's considerably stronger. He's added quite a bit this summer.
Plus, he's got a smile on his face when he's coming down the floor. He's not playing with a bunch of bums anymore. And this is a beautiful thing, because no one's expecting him to do anything. And this is when you get to shine in the NBA. And I think he's going to rock and roll this year. I really do. You know, somebody told me the other day, well, I guess they wrote in a comment, I don't like Phil very much because he's a Cavs fan. No, I'm not. I'm a Knicks fan. I just have the Cavs on my show. I like a couple of Cavs players a lot. Tristan Thompson being one. The other one that I really like is Deion Waiters. I'm going to tell you, I heard a rumor the other day. I can't tell you where I heard it from because it's not nice, and I don't have permission to exchange it. But I heard this rumor that Deion Waiters is on the trading block and they're looking to trade him for Roy Hibbert. What would you do with that trade?
Well, I mean, Deion's, per the media, has been on the trading block since he's been drafted by the Cavs. I don't think that's something that they're entertaining at this point. It would be really tough to make work with the salary cap. I don't think they're considering trading him right now. That might be something maybe come January that would come up, but I think Deion can settle into the right role with this Cavs team. I've talked about this before. I think he kind of needs to settle into almost the Delonte West role, where he can take over offensively at times, playing good defense, facilitating the offense, driving kicks, which he's very good at, like just doing everything. He needs to be that gadget guy that can take over. I mean, obviously he has a much higher ceiling than Delonte ever did, but Delonte fit really, really well with the that previous LeBron team and was probably their second best player for large portions of it.
You're probably right, too, but he's not one of LeBron James' favorite players. That's not going to happen. I hope Deion Waiters doesn't assume that role. Because
yeah, on court, not off court.
Yeah, on court. I could tell you stories about that, but we'll leave it be. If it were me, if I'm going to shop Deion Waiters, and I would consider it considering what they have on that roster, I'm not trading him for Roy Hibbert. Not even close. I'm going to trade him for someone who can actually take care of business for a full season, something that we know, and not a work in progress like Roy Hibbert still is. Roy Hibbert's a nice player, but you could get better for Dion Waiters. And I think if it were me, I'm going to entertain or not entertain the Hibbert trade, but I'll entertain some. There's some guys out there I'd trade Waiters for.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Yeah.
But still in all, it's going to be an interesting season for the Cavs for sure. Now, what about the Miami game, Justin? What did you see in that? Because that had to be weird.
Yeah, that was a fun game. I mean, you obviously, the most played replay from that game was LeBron setting a screen on Dellavedova, which sure he's playing it off, but it was pretty evident that he did set the screen on Dellavedova. I don't know what else he could have been doing. But outside of that, you know, it was a fun game to watch. I do like Chris Bosch as a player, and it's fun to see him no longer have to be that guy that's spacing the floor and creating lanes for Wade, who doesn't really have a jump shot. And Bosch was attacking the rim, being who he was in Toronto, getting rebounds. That was fun to see. It was obviously weird seeing LeBron take on the Heat. Tristan Thompson, again, was very good in that game. Waiters was very good as well. It was disappointing we didn't get to see Kyrie play in it, but it was fun. And to tell you the truth, it's kind of disappointing that they did play in the preseason, because it would be fun to see the first matchup be in the regular season on Christmas Day.
You're right, but they did that because they wanted to pump it up for Brazil. That's the globalization of the NBA deal. But the Heat guys thought it was kind of interesting too, you know, because they hadn't watched him play outside of the Heat, and they'd forgotten how he was with Cleveland. Mm-hmm. And you know what? They're not. I guess if you listen, you have to listen to Wednesday's show. Last Wednesday's show. It's up on my website. But yeah, they don't even care anymore, to be honest with you, and they shouldn't. And
no.
It was kind of anticlimactic for me anyway. I mean, it was just, okay, there they are. Here he is. In fact, that morning I had somebody tell me that LeBron James was filming a Sprite commercial in Akron. I said, no, he's in Brazil. No, he's not. I said, huh? But it was an amazing game. It was fun to watch. And we've learned a lot about the Cavs. They're going to have a tough time on defense, right?
Yeah, I mean, they were ranked 19th, I believe, last year, 17th to 19th, depending what metric you're looking at on defense. Basically, every player that they brought in is a defensive improvement over the guy they're replacing. And I do believe Tyronn Lue will have a good effect on this team. It's going to be continuity and familiarity, like I said. It's going to take some time. I think they're going to be middle of the pack. You can see them be maybe 12th to 18th. On defense this year. Like, this isn't the worst defensive team in the NBA, not even close, but it is going to take some time to mesh there.
Oh, it certainly will. It took time for LeBron when he moved his took his talents to South Beach, and it's going to be the same thing. Actually, it's going to be a little different because all these fellas are young, and they don't really have the experience that the others do, or did, I should say. He did bring some old guys to hang out with and play cards with on the plane, and that's always good for the King. But it should be a fun season, and we'll be here to cover it every single week. Justin, thank you so much for being on the show with me today.
No problem at all. It was a good time.
All right. That was Justin Rowan. You can find him over at fearthesword.com, and that's going to wrap it up for today's Phil Mason Show. I want to thank all my guests for making this a two-thirds of a Cleveland Monday. Thanks to the football guy. Maybe next week he'll be here. If not, we'll figure something out. Until then, y'all take care of yourselves. Be good, and most importantly...
Ladies and gentlemen, my mother thanks you, my father thanks you, my sister thanks you, and I thank you.